Thank you, Mike, and thank you, Donna. Always feels nice to end on that song, anyway. It always feels nice. Brother, how you feeling?
Fine.
You're... And you knew I was the one preaching, right?
That's right.
Okay. Confidence. Might not be warranted, but it's confidence. That's for sure. It's a little fitting that Howard actually fell this morning. I say that only because tomorrow, as you know, is Veterans Day. And the last time I was around Howard when he fell, the two of us were taking an honor flight to go to Washington because him being a veteran. And so I don't rejoice in you falling when I say it's fitting, but wow, I mean, how interesting. But tomorrow is Veterans Day, and I do like to take the time to thank our veterans. As you know, in many churches, just like ours, there stands two flags. You got the American flag and you got the Christian flag. Many, many churches in the United States have that. And these two flags represent two types of freedom. One is a freedom that allows us to go where we want to go, say what we want to say, to live where we want to live, to dream big dreams and pursue them. Someone once wrote, it's a veteran, not the reporter, who has given us freedom of the press. It's the veteran, not the poet, who gave us freedom of speech. It's the veteran, not the campus organizer, who gives us freedom to assemble. It is the veteran, not the lawyer, who gives us the right to a fair trial. It's the veteran, not the politician, who has given us the right to vote. And it's the veteran, not the preacher, in this country who's given us freedom of religion. Veterans over the centuries have sacrificed much, so much, to obtain and preserve this precious freedom, which also includes the God-given right to worship our Creator anytime, anywhere. That leads us to the other type of freedom, represented by the Christian flag. This is a greater freedom that can only be found in Christ, who died to set us free. This is a freedom from a life of futility, a freedom from tyranny of sin, regret, hate, bitterness. It's a freedom to love God and love our neighbor. To serve either of these two flags and the freedoms that they represent faithfully and effectively, we must meet certain requirements before one can become a veteran. They must first be a good soldier. So my question for you today is, what does it take to become a veteran? And not just a military veteran, but a spiritual veteran. The Apostle Paul knew something, a little something about being a spiritual veteran. He knew something about that. Having enlisted in the Lord's army after encountering Jesus on the road to Damascus, and enduring countless dangers, toils, snares. As a result, Paul was a veteran Christian if there ever was one. Toward the end of his life, while facing execution for his commitment to Christ, Paul sat in a cold Roman cell, a prison cell, cut off from the world with just a quill and some parchment. Paul knew that he would soon be executed, and so he wrote his final thoughts to a young pastor named Timothy, passing to him the torch of leadership, reminding him of what was truly important and encouraging him to keep the faith, Turn with me to 2 Timothy chapter 2 to read his words. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. Here the Apostle Paul, in verse 3, says, "Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen," in other words, enlisted him to be a soldier. So here, in these two short verses, Paul brings four concepts to bear that I want to talk about today. Here he says, no one entangled in warfare, or engaged in warfare, I should say, no one engaged in warfare entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier. And that's what Paul is saying here. And so these four concepts I want to talk about this morning are enlist, endure, engage, and entangle, each representing a different aspect of what it takes to become a veteran soldier of Christ. I actually want to start with the last one that's mentioned here, enlist. So you can't become a veteran if you don't enlist. Thankfully, in our country, we no longer have a forced draft. Recruitment officers are sent out to encourage people to volunteer, but men and women have the freedom to choose whether or not they serve in the American military today. And people make that choice for different reasons, and I've talked to many. I've had a son in the military. A lot of young people I've talked to, they enlist so that they can go to college. Others, out of the sense of a patriotic duty. Some were raised in a military family. And still others because they're looking for some sense of direction or challenge in their life. No matter what the reasons are, it's a tough decision, life-changing, to simply leave everything behind. I can speak from experience on that. God does not force anyone to serve him either. He does send out recruiters like you and me to encourage people to serve in his army. But it is our choice. We discussed not that long ago, what about those who've never heard? God doesn't make anyone serve him. It's your choice. He doesn't make anyone believe in him. It's their choice. People make the decision for different reasons. Maybe you were brought up with the faith of your parents. Maybe you sense God's leading in your life, or maybe you came to Christ looking for a sense of purpose and direction where you had none before. That was my situation. No matter the reason, it's a life-changing decision and not one to be taken lightly. Amen? Is it a life-changing decision? It should be. And ultimately it is. It's a personal pledge that you are going to let Christ become the leader of your life. And I'm certain that there are many here today who can testify that it was the best decision that they've ever made in their life. And I would raise my hand to that. The first step to becoming a spiritual veteran is enlisting. Have you enlisted? The next step is to endure, as we see in here that Paul mentions. Enduring is nothing new for a soldier. Soldiers in every branch of the military have a lot to endure, not the least of which is the grueling physical punishment experienced during basic training. I can recall going into basic training myself and hearing from others and before me talking about the worst day of all was whenever you go to the gas chamber. You go to that gas chamber, and you want to talk about enduring. They take you into a small building, big enough just to get every single member of your company in there, and they're teaching you the importance of, one, how important that gas mask is. Because once you take it off, it is a horrible, horrible experience. What you endure in those moments with your eyes feeling like somebody just shot acid in them, your nose just running like you can't imagine, and there's somebody big standing in the doorway that says, you can't get out of here until you do this. What you endure in those moments... I may have forgotten a lot of things during boot camp, but I did not forget about that one. And any time I think of somebody who goes into boot camp, the first thing I think of is, oh boy, I wish I could get a picture of what's going to happen. Of course, there's also many less physical hardships that someone in the military has to endure. Sometimes that's dealing with just being away from your family. That was tough for me. And that's tough for our veterans today. Sometimes it's just the rigid life of being in the military. And you see that through ranking officers. I can remember some stories of somebody in boot camp in particular who made the mistake of telling the company commander no. I don't even have to tell you how that worked out for him. You know, there's a story when it comes to our ranking officers. It's kind of funny. This Air Force major, and yeah, I did say Air Force in this story because I was Navy. So, you know, sorry the Air Force guys, but it's just for the sake of this. This Air Force major who was promoted to a colonel. You were Air Force, right? Yeah. All right, so we'll say, I can't say Marines, we'll say Army, okay? He was promoted to a colonel, and he went and got into his new office. And that first morning, he gets to his new office, and this airman knocks on his door, and he asked to speak with him. This colonel, really wanting to set the right impression on this young airman, he picked up his phone, and he begins talking, and he says, "Yes, General, thank you. Yes, I will pass that information on to the president. Yes, goodbye, sir." And then he turns to the airman and he says, "What do you want?" "Nothing important, sir." He says, "I'm just here to hook up your phone." So, sometimes having our leaders can be difficult as well. But if you want to be a veteran, you have to have endurance. You have to be willing to deal with the things that are facing you. And as Paul told Timothy, in verse 3, 2 Timothy chapter 2, he says, "Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ." As a soldier of Jesus Christ, you are going to endure hardness, difficulty. Now, thankfully, due to the veterans of this flag and this nation, we don't have to endure the kind of hardness that others do. We live in a country where Christians don't experience the kind of hardships that they do in other parts of the world. Hardships like Paul once experienced. During his journeys, Paul was flogged and stoned and shipwrecked and many more things. But even in America, life is full of hardships. Bad things happen, and our faith, believe it or not, is tested. So we enlist. We endure. And the next thing you do if you want to be a veteran in the Lord's work is we engage. You are not called to be a Christian that does not engage in this world, who does not engage for the sake of Christ. General Sherman once said, "You don't know the horrible aspects of war. I've been through two wars, and I know. I've seen cities and homes in ashes. I've seen thousands of men lying on the ground with their dead faces looking up at the skies. I tell you, war is hell." That last part, I'm sure most of you are very familiar with the quote. And while I've never experienced the horrible aspects of war, I have great respect for those who have. Those who have been engaged in war. And even those servicemen and women who are blessed to serve during peacetime, however, but they must still be prepared to engage the enemy. They go through training. They have to be prepared to engage the enemy, regardless if it's peacetime. Through training exercises and combat practice, they stay sharp and vigilant, always prepared for battle. And if you pay attention to the news here off the coast of Florida, we just had a young man fall off of an airplane and go plunge 1,500 feet to his death in peacetime. Preparing to engage the enemy. As Christians, we need to do the same. As Paul explains in 2 Timothy chapter 10, if you want to turn there with me, verses 4 and 5. 2 Timothy chapter 10. I'm sorry, 2 Corinthians. That was a test. Okay, you guys are awake. 2 Corinthians chapter 10. You can't get anything by this church, that's for sure. 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Verse 4. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations, and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. See, we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. That's how we engage, church. We demolish the arguments that want to set themselves up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. In other words, as good soldiers of Jesus Christ, we have to be prepared to engage in spiritual warfare. People don't want to talk about that. But church, I'm here to tell you, there is a spiritual war that's going on. And if you walk out that door unprepared, if you walk out your door in your house unprepared, you're about going to be as successful at fighting that war here on this side of glory as the soldier who never practices. We stand opposed to false religions and worldviews that are hostile towards Christianity. We do not take it lying down. We engage with truth. We are called to defend our faith with reason and precision. We cannot be afraid to stand up for Jesus, either in the public square or even in our personal relationships. I've known people just... not going to name names, that I know other men in the ministry that are brokenhearted about standing up. And I don't say this to the wrong, but it's a tough thing to do. Brokenhearted about standing up to their family with the truth of Jesus Christ. See, we do engage with our loved ones, with the world. God is counting on us to take captives, which means surrendering our own thought and beliefs to Christ, but also leading others to do the same with gentleness and respect. And that's where a lot of times problems seem to come. Oh, we're good at telling people they're wrong. We can be pretty good at telling people they're wrong. The tough thing is to do it with love and respect. That's tough. See, in the Lord's army, we don't kill our enemies. We try to make them our allies. That's what we do. The good news is, just like the veterans of this flag that didn't fight alone, neither are we. We're not fighting alone. Just as soldiers in the platoon or a company depend on each other, Christians rely on the church and their church family for support. And if you don't, if you think that you've got it all handled, I'm telling you, you're making a mistake. We rely on our church family. This is the main reason that we do not forsake the fellowship of the saints. The strength that comes in the unity. Oh, you're going to have arguments with members of the body. Oh, you're going to have disagreements. But if you think that you can just go and go do it on your own yourself, I can tell you right now, even the Apostle Paul didn't do that. Even he didn't do that. Even more, we have God on our side. And what's the old saying? If he be for us, who can be against us? As Christians, we shouldn't ever be afraid to engage our friends or co-workers or culture. It seems today, unfortunately, there's too much of the other belief systems trying to browbeat the Christians into just being quiet. Just be silent. Count your blessings and be grateful what you have, but don't say a word. That's what's going on in this world. And church, we're to engage. We're to engage with the culture. We're to engage with those around us. In order to be a veteran, we must enlist, we must endure, we must engage. And finally, don't get entangled. Sort of fourth aspect that Paul introduces here, this fourth concept, is don't be entangled. No one serving as a soldier gets entangled in the concerns of civilian life. That's what he's saying in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 4. Is anybody who is involved in warfare doesn't get entangled with other things. There's another story I'll share with you about a new recruit. And this one is about the Navy, so I'll be fair about that. After joining the Navy, he asked his officer for a pass so he could attend a wedding. The officer gave him the pass but informed the young man he'd have to be back by 7 p.m. on Sunday. And he says to him, "You don't understand, sir. I'm in the wedding." And he says, "No, you don't understand. You're in the Navy." You see? You can't. This is why in so many ways there are things when you're in the military that you can go be involved with and things you can't be involved with. When you're deployed and you're facing the enemy, do you think that you're supposed to be entangled in all kinds of other things? No, and the same thing is with us. And this is what Paul is talking about. Don't be entangled with the world, the ways of the world. Here, you're in a battle. That's what he's talking about. When you serve this American flag, you're expected to be completely committed to your country and to allow nothing to prevent you from performing your duties. No one would disagree with that. When you serve this Christian flag, you are also expected to be completely committed to Christ and His agenda. You're expected to serve Him faithfully, not allowing anything to keep you from doing His will in your life. Unfortunately, countless Christians, after coming to Christ in faith, they do get entangled in the affairs of this world. I'm sure that we're all guilty of that. They let other things become more important to them than Jesus. In fact, Jesus told a story once about this very thing, back in Luke chapter 8, he talks about the seeds that fell among the thorns, and that they represent those who hear the message, but all too quickly that message is crowded out by the cares and the riches and the pleasures of this life. Now obviously here the Lord is talking to the nation of Israel and dealing with them, but that doesn't change the truth of that statement. Even today, with Christians, all too often, and there have been periods in my life where it's been very much true, I'm going to be honest with you, there's been periods in my life where the cares of this world I got too entangled with. But as a soldier for that flag, God through the Apostle Paul, tells us don't let it happen. We need to be careful about the things we let distract us from Jesus. As Paul has said elsewhere, we'll turn there. Philippians, turn to Philippians chapter 3, verse 8. Philippians chapter 3, verse 8. See, this was Paul, the Apostle Paul's approach during his ministry. How he counted the things of the world. Verse 8 says, "Yea, doubtless, and I count all things but loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, and do count them but dung, that I may win Christ." You see, Paul likely had money. He was born outside of Israel, a Roman citizen, sent to Jerusalem to learn under the most premier of the master teachers in the law. He becomes elevated to the point that he's one of the most scholarly men of the law, that he can literally, and think of this, this is a man who had the ability to walk into the high priest and the chief priest and to speak to them and ask for papers so that he can go try to put other people in prison who believed in Jesus. So this wasn't just somebody off the street. This was a man who had privilege. This is a man who had status. This is a man who probably had wealth. This is a man that all the people, when they decided to stone Stephen, they laid their cloaks down at his feet, showing his authority. And he says, "I lost everything, and I count it as nothing for the sake of the knowledge of Christ." Oh, how much I wish I had that attitude. As I said before, there are two types of freedom embodied in these two flags you see up here. And we want to say many thanks to the veterans who have served to preserve our political freedoms. And I'm not even sure who all here are veterans. But we owe you a debt of gratitude. I know Howard's a veteran. You can see the scars just from this morning. But I know some of you are. Trying to name names, but I'm going to forget people I know. Pastor Bedore, you're a veteran, right? That's what I thought. And I don't know who else. But to each and every one of you who have served and to help protect our political freedoms, and even those who aren't alive today, all the way back to the founding of this country, who are willing to lay it all on the line in sacrifice, we should give our thanks. But there's someone else who gave it all. Those political freedoms are ultimately important because they allow us to worship our Creator freely, who gave us that greater freedom that we so desperately need. And we live in a country that, because the veterans of this flag, we can try to recruit more veterans to this flag. Maybe you're entangled in the cares and worries of life. Maybe you're afraid to engage people in spiritual conversation. Maybe you're enduring hardship. Or maybe you have not even yet enlisted in God's army. And you're just thinking about it. And that you need someone to talk to. I don't know where you are in your relationship with God, but if there's anything that I can do to help you become a spiritual veteran, don't hesitate to speak to me. I know that doesn't matter if it's through questions in the box back there, emails, phone calls, stopping in early before Bible study, whatever the case may be. It is my desire to help create more veterans of this flag. And I'm sure and I know that there are other people here who want to help in that same way. And the only way to become a veteran and the only way to enlist is to understand the gospel of your salvation. So you can go up and talk to a recruiter and you've got to sign on the dotted line, so to speak, here. Well, it's actually easier to get on this side than it is even to go serve in this one. I know. It was a long time of stuff to do this. To serve Christ, all you have to do is to put your faith and trust in the finished work of Jesus Christ, and it's done, paid for, and guess what? You're part of the family. Part of the family. Part of the family of God, and guess what? You may not be a veteran yet, but you're going to start down that path. And the glorious and great news of that salvation is that He that began a good work in you will perform it. Even if you want to fight against Him. So my encouragement to those, if you are here today or you're listening to this message, if you have not put your faith and trust in Jesus Christ, I can tell you right now, as important as our political freedoms are, there is a time coming that God is going to judge the world by His Son, Jesus Christ. And there's only one way to avoid that judgment, and that is putting your faith in Jesus Christ. Will you stand with me as we close in prayer? Mike, would you close us in prayer?